Alastair Harrington Bland at Ebbets Field. The one event Alastair Harrington Bland had promised himself not to miss on his first trip to America was a baseball game, about which he knew absolutely nothing, but had been fired up to see by the Yanks he had served with in the recent war against the Kaiser. Though from a family of upper-crust connections, Bland was one of those agape young Englishmen who regarded the world from a constant state of surprise and vacuous delight, forever taken in by its fabrications. When one of his American buddies informed him that the houses in California looked so colorful because their owners used striped paint, Bland couldn't believe it, but did. Now, finding himself climbing the stone steps of Ebbets Field, the stadium where the irrepressible fans of the Brooklyn Robins, also known as Dem Bums, awaited the opening pitch, his excitement mounted. These were the fans who put their team only second to God, but abused it like the devil. They came to the games prepared to commit mayhem and murder at the slightest provocation, such as a successful bunt by the opposition, or a decision by an umpire against their team. It was happening all around him on this hot July day, and the game hadn't even begun yet. Amidst the cries of the Frankfurter vendors, hot dogs, mustard and sauerkraut, and the calls of the lemonade dispensers and the peanut sellers, the crowd yelled, "Come on out and play, bums!" Wearing a high-crowned beige summer hat, a white jacket over an open collared shirt, and a light ascot, Bland searched for a seat high up in the rapidly filling stands. He spotted one next to the occupant of the aisle seat. "Big pardon," he said, in his lofty, clipped accent. "May I?" The leathery, suntanned fellow in an undershirt wore a soiled white cap, angled sharply over his suspicious eyes, the very short end of a butt thrust out of the corner of his lips. "Huh?" he inquired, staring up at Bland's lanky figure and long-faced, innocent look.
I say, may I acquire the adjacent accommodation?" Bland asked.
"What's that?"
"That seat. Is it vacant?"
"I don't see nobody sitting in it. It's your choice if you want it."
"Pleasure,"
Bland said, crossed by him, and before he sat down, surveyed the field.
"Rather a splendid convocation, wouldn't you say?"
"Hey, wait a minute. You're an Aussie, ain't you?"
"Oh, no, British."
Yeah, well, I knew right away you wasn't normal. I had an Aussie in my cab last week. He didn't speak English either. I bet you never seen a baseball game before."
"Very perceptive of you, I must say."
"Does that mean you did or you didn't?"
"Did or didn't what?"
"Yeah, see a baseball game."
"I must apologize, you know. I did mean to see one."
"Well, if you ain't seen one, you come to the right place. You know who's pitching today?"
"Pitching? No, what's that?"
"Well, you know there's a pitcher and a catcher, don't you? One guy throws and the other guy catches."
"Oh, yes. Although my knowledge stops there. Tell me, what is the numerical content of each team?"
"I'm not sure of that. But there's supposed to be 9 men on each side."
"And are there?"
"Never. 9 on ours, but 10 on theirs."
"My word. What an unusual arrangement. That sounds rather unfair.
That's the way it is. The umpire's always with them.
He stood up and put his hands to either sides of his mouth and bellowed,
"Watch out, yous umpires, because we're watching yous."
This received a raucous agreement from the surrounding seats and brought on a spate of additional threats and hand-clapping.
"Is that customary?" Bland asked.
"Oh, without doubts, day and night,"
the chap in the cap assured him.
"You see, if yous don't let them umps know yous is watching them, they will rob the pants off you. By the way, what's your moniker?"
"I don't believe I have one. What is it?"
"What your old lady calls when she wants you."
"Oh, my, how natural. Yes, Pussycat."
"Pussycat? That's your name?"
"Well, actually, it isn't, you know. You asked what my mother calls me. That's Pussycat. Sometimes, when she's in a rush, just Pussy. My name is Alastair Harrington Bland."
"No wonder she calls you Pussy."
"That's very amusing, yes. Well, I'll have to mention that to her."
"Jack's my moniker. Short and sweet. Jack Stack, if you want the whole."
"Pleasure,"
Bland acknowledged. A roar from the crowd accompanied the appearance of the teams on the field from the clubhouse, who started to throw the ball around.
"By the way, who's the man in the iron mask?"
Bland inquired, staring at the catcher. Jack, concentrating on a newspaper clipping of the team lineups, thinking Bland was referring to the recent movie of the same name, replied without looking up,
"I ain't sure. Probably Douglas Fairbanks."
"Not really,"
Bland exclaimed.
"Talented, isn't he? He plays baseball as well, does he?"
"Who plays baseball as well?"
"Douglas Fairbanks."
"I never heard that,"
Jack said, shaking his head.
"Whoa! There he is! Greatest pitcher in the world! Hey, Dazzy! That's Dazzy Vance. Watch him warm up. He got a spitball, could kill you. Attaboy, Dazzy!"
What do the others do out there?"
"Well, you see that guy, Justin back into the side of Dazzy? He's the shortstop."
"He is rather small."
"No, you don't get it. He stops the ball short, you see."
"And aren't his colleagues also supposed to stop the ball short?"
"Yeah, of course, that's the whole idea."
Then they are all shortstops, are they?"
"What are you talking about? How can they all be shortstops? Over there is the first baseman. The first baseman stays on first base to trap the runner. Next is the second baseman, who does the same on second. Then there's the third baseman, the same on third. Wait a minute, hold on. Here comes the first pitch."
The multitude suddenly became still, as if some holy moment had occurred, and then breathed a sigh as the umpire made his call.
"Strike one!"
Then came the second pitch.
"Ball one!"
the umpire cried, raising the finger on both hands.
"One and one!"
"Boo! Boo!"
retorted the crowd.
What happened?"
asked Bland.
"The umpire said he threw a ball. That's what," Jack said.
"What was he supposed to throw if not a ball?"
Bland demanded.
"The pitcher got two choices. If he throws it not so good, it's called a ball. If he throws it good, it's a strike. Well, he got a third way, too. He can throw it and hit the batter in the head."
"I say, I wouldn't call that cricket, would you?"
"No, I'd call it hitting the batter in the head. He gets on first base for free for that. Then he could take his revenge by stealing a base. He could steal all the bases."
"But there are thousands of witnesses. Shocking. What does he do with them?"
Are you a cuckoo?
It means sneaking from first to third under the nose of the pitcher who tries to catch him in between. If he doesn't catch him, he runs home.
That early in the game?
Wait a second. Wait a second. That's Hank Cutter at bat there. He's the Cubs' leadoff this game. He's liable to get a hit.
And the crack of the bat hitting the ball brought the stands to its feet.
Cutter ran to first base as an outfielder scooped up the ball and threw it to the first baseman. The ball and Cutter both seemed to arrive at the base together. Cutter sliding in.
Safe!
Cried the umpire. A crowd howled in despair.
You're blind as a bat, you bum!
Jack shouted, backed up by the stands.
By the fifth inning, Bland had acquired a tangled version of the rules. At the seventh inning stretch, during which Jack stepped into the aisle and did 20 push-ups, they indulged in refreshments.
Hot dogs is the Angels' food of baseball, Jack informed him, while Bland insisted on standing treat on behalf of all the information he had received.
My regimental commander was a duke, Bland confided, and inadvertently I discovered Frankfurters were his favorite. He would have been delighted with this, although he used ketchup.
Ketchup on hot dogs is a sin. But I'll tell you something. I had my cab filled with oils last week.
Oh, how often do you do that?
Well, it just happened. I was outside the Plaza Hotel, dropping off a fare, when these three guys, dressed real fancy, get in. Each and every one of them was an oil. Would you believe it?
Oils?
Yeah, each and every one of them. A businessman from a family of oils.
Remarkable. Standard Oil?
I didn't ask them. I didn't ask them nothing. They sounded a lot like yous, only worse. I didn't get that they was in the oil business, but you never know.
In the ninth inning, with the score tied, each team with two runs, Zach Wheat, the great Brooklyn outfielder, hit a home run and won the game. The cheering crowds departed hugely satisfied after a roaring send-off to their beloved Robins. Jack had his cab parked in the lot and insisted on driving Bland to a more distant subway station to avoid the mob.
Your taxis are very different from the London cabs, you know, Bland said from the back seat.
Yeah, I seen pictures of them. They look more like a hoist than a taxi.
What a quaint observation. You Americans have always been a riddle to me. But some day I'm going to catch on to you.
Yeah, how'd you like to hear a real Brooklyn riddle before you return to Egypt? Jack asked as the cab moved slowly through the traffic.
England, Bland corrected politely. I would be utterly delighted to take that back with me, please.
Okay, this is it. This is the riddle. It ain't my father. It ain't my mother. It ain't my sister. It ain't my brother. Who is it?
Jack waited, chuckling at the wheel as the cab rolled on, and Bland, laughing in the back seat, tried to guess the answer. Finally giving up, he admitted his failure.
No, I can't guess. Who is it?
It's me, Jack cried victoriously.
Oh, jolly good old man. Oh, I'm certainly not going to forget that one, I promise you.
At the station, they shook hands.
Pleasure making your acquaintance. I would never have known anything, including first, second, and third, as I now do, and will explain it all to my ignorant companions.
Have a great trip, Jack called in parting, and shouted back as he pulled away, and don't hit any icebergs!
Ice what? Bland cried.
but the taxi was too far away for him to be heard. His friends accorded him a huge reception upon his arrival, and at a spate of parties, he was the featured guest, everyone demanding accounts of his adventures. But he was so full of stories about tours of New England, and especially of Valley Forge, where a local con artist sold him a bottle from the original water over which Washington had crossed the Delaware River, that it was not until a few weeks later that he recalled the riddle at a boisterous gathering of his most intimate friends. They insisted he tell it to them at once.
"Now you must listen quite closely, you know, chaps, because this will give you an academic headache in your efforts to elucidate the answer. Now, are you ready? Here goes. It's not my father. It's not my mother. It's not my sister. It's not my brother. Who is it?"
He beamed at his audience, standing round him holding their cocktails and smoking their cigarettes in positive ignorance, looking at each other and giggling, hunching their shoulders and finally demanding the answer.
"Come on, Alistair, you must tell us. We can't get it. Who is it?" "Some bloody cab driver in Brooklyn!"